A long, long time ago, when magic was a respected art, and even evil sorcerers dwelled in quite respectable kingdoms, there lived a prince named Siegfried. Now, Prince Siegfried was deeply worried about the coming of his 21st birthday, for his parents had declared that on that day he must choose a princess to be his bride. But Siegfried knew of no princess in the kingdom whom he wished to marry. Indeed, Siegfried was not in love with anyone. The day grew closer, and still there was no one who had won his heart. All the beautiful and eligible princesses of the kingdom were invited to the grand ball celebrating Siegfried's 21st birthday. Surely someone whom he would be willing to choose as his bride would be there. It was a magnificently decorated ballroom that night. Candles shone from the crystal chandeliers. The lords wore their white ties and tails with medals on their jackets. The ladies wore their most beautiful gowns with their most precious rings over gloved hands. The orchestra beckoned them towards the dancing with the most inviting music. The queen signaled to the conductor of the orchestra, and the grand waltz began. Thank you. Siegfried was not eager to dance. He danced with his mother, he danced with his cousins and with dear friends, but the more the prince danced, the more unhappy he became. He simply could not imagine marrying anyone whom he had not met before or with whom he was not in love. But when the king and queen presented the prince with a brand new crossbow, his eyes lit up, and as the orchestra struck up a polonaise, Siegfried just had to join in the dancing. But neither all the delightful dancing nor all the marvelous music could bring cheer to Prince Siegfried's heart. The prospect of having to choose a bride that very evening simply made him miserable. And so, very quietly and unnoticed, Siegfried slipped out of the palace with his crossbow and wandered aimlessly through the forest. All at once, he found himself at the edge of a shimmering, moonlit lake. He gazed in astonishment at an extraordinary sight. A flock of beautiful white swans were gliding to and fro across the silver waters of the lake. Siegfried was overwhelmed by the beauty and magic of the sight before him. But there was more. As if in a trance, he beheld the first of all the swans, with a jeweled crown upon her head, gliding to the shore, where she was transformed into the most beautiful princess he had ever seen. Hesitatingly, gently, he approached the princess and asked how all this had come to pass. She answered that she was the Princess Odette, and that she and her sisters were under a terrible spell cast by the evil magician Von Rothbart. She and her sisters had all been turned into swans and were destined to remain so all their lives. Only between the witching hours of midnight and dawn could they return to their human forms. But at the very first light of day, they must become swans again. And then Prince Siegfried and the Swan Princess danced together in the moonlight. "Can the spell ever be broken?" asked Siegfried, who, captivated by Odette's beauty and won over by her grace of manner and sincerity, had fallen hopelessly in love with her. "Only if a prince who has never loved before declares his undying and endless love for me, only then can the spell be broken," replied the princess. "Then so it shall be," declared Siegfried. "At midnight, come to the palace, for it is then that I must announce the name of my betrothed, and that name shall be yours, my magnificent Odette, for you are the first I have ever loved. Then shall the spell be broken, and we shall live together in happiness forever." "So it shall be, my handsome Prince Siegfried," replied Odette, who now was equally in love with him. "At midnight, I will come to the palace in my human form, there to become your bride."
Thank you.
Siegfried returned to the palace ball, overjoyed at the plan he and Odette had made. Filled with love for her in his heart, Siegfried slipped back into the palace as easily as when he had left. The guests were far too busy dining and dancing to have noticed the prince's departure and now his return. A trumpet fanfare called the ladies and their noble escorts to order. Each princess was announced and entered the ballroom on the arm of her escort, for no princess would ever attend such a grand ball without a nobleman to dance with. Each in turn was then introduced to the prince, who now stood on a throned platform next to his mother. The princesses proceeded to the dance floor with their elegant partners. The orchestra struck up a waltz, and the prince moved gracefully from one princess to the next, dancing beautifully with each one. Indeed, he was most gracious because he knew that at the stroke of midnight, Odette would arrive, and then he would triumphantly introduce her to one and all as his chosen bride. Another fanfare was played, and to everyone's astonishment, an uninvited guest stood at the top of the elegant marble staircase. He was dressed all in black, an ominous-looking figure, and known to all as the evil magician, Von Rothbart. And with him, why, Siegfried could scarcely believe his eyes, for standing beside Von Rothbart was a beautiful woman, also dressed in black, who looked exactly like his beloved Odette. Von Rothbart announced her as his daughter Odile, but Siegfried was sure that she was Odette. Slowly and lovingly, the prince advanced towards her, took her hands in his, and together they began to dance. Thank you. the clock had not struck 12, and Siegfried could not imagine why Odette had arrived on Von Rothbart's arm. He did not know that the evil Von Rothbart had followed him through the forest, had overheard his conversation with Odette, and had turned his own daughter Odile into the very image of Siegfried's beloved Odette. The more Siegfried danced, the more certain he was of his love. Unable to contain his joy, he turned to the assembled throng and announced that this princess in black would be his bride. As the clock struck midnight, a wondrous and beautiful white swan appeared. All the dancers gathered round her, and, to Siegfried's horror, the swan turned into the Princess Odette. Realizing that Siegfried had been tricked by Von Rothbart, Odette, overwhelmed with sadness, fled from the palace into the darkness of the night. The distraught Siegfried raced after her. She ran through the forest to a high cliff overlooking the lake of her refuge, and Siegfried, unable to catch up to her, watched in despair as she leapt from the rocky precipice, plunged into the dark waters below, and sank beneath the stormy waves. Faced with marriage to the deceitful Odile, or death with his beloved Odette, Siegfried followed his swan princess, leaping from the cliff's edge into the cold waters below. Then, to the amazement of the other swans, through the mist over the lake, a white boat appeared. Seated therein were Odette and Siegfried, their arms clasped around each other. And so, as happens in kingdoms where magic is a respected art, The swan boat lifted the devoted couple into the heavens, where they lived happily ever after.
Tchaikovsky, the composer of the music that you just heard, is perhaps the most popular of all classical composers. This is Tchaikovsky. This is Tchaikovsky. And, of course, this is Tchaikovsky. Would you like to know how an insecure, overly sensitive, extremely messy boy became one of the most famous composers of all time? Good. I thought so. Tchaikovsky was born in 1840 into a well-to-do, educated family in a small town in Russia. He began piano lessons when he was five and, being a smart young man, could soon read music as well as his teacher. When his father was appointed director of the St. Petersburg Technological Institute, the family moved to St. Petersburg and Tchaikovsky was enrolled in a fancy boarding school, one that would prepare him for a respectable career in the Russian civil service. While he went to the opera and the theater with classmates, music was not encouraged at his school. But when his mother died of cholera, young Tchaikovsky had a surprising way of dealing with his grief. He began to compose music. His father encouraged him and paid for piano lessons, but no one expected that Pyotr would become a musician. In fact, when his father asked his piano teacher if he thought that his son had any hope of a career in music, the teacher politely suggested that a career in the civil service would probably be a better option for Peter Ilyich Tchaikovsky. Tchaikovsky finished his studies and accepted a very junior position in the Ministry of Justice, but in the evenings he started taking classes in music theory. As good fortune would have it, Tchaikovsky was standing in the right place at the right time. In 1861, the first music conservatory in Russia was founded in St. Petersburg, and Tchaikovsky's theory teacher was invited to join the faculty. With his teacher's encouragement, Tchaikovsky quit his civil service job and enrolled in the new St. Petersburg Conservatory of Music. From 1861 to 1865, Tchaikovsky studied composition and made such an impression that when he graduated, he was invited to join the faculty at the newly established Conservatory of Music in Moscow. So far, the story seems fairly straightforward, but genius very rarely comes so neatly packaged. Tchaikovsky was not an easy child. He was highly emotional and very attached to his mother. And, as I said before, he was extremely untidy. As a teenager, he loaned books from his father's library without asking and never saw that his friends returned them. He was terribly shy and, even as his reputation was growing, would sneak into the back of concert halls, hoping to be unnoticed as his works were performed. Once someone spotted him and dragged the mortified Tchaikovsky up onto the stage. In his old clothes, he was forced to face hundreds and hundreds of applauding fans. His first conducting experiences were painful and unsuccessful. He suffered from stage fright. But all of the intense emotions that he experienced that might lead one to conclude that he was possibly a nutcase were the same intense emotions that led him to compose such passionate and overpowering music. There were three important women in Tchaikovsky's life: his mother, his wife, and his patroness. His mother died when he was only 14, and his marriage lasted only 3 weeks. But in 1876, 6 months after Tchaikovsky completed the score for Swan Lake, the widow of a railroad tycoon, Madame von Meck, wrote to him. She offered an annual stipend of 6,000 rubles so that he could quit his job at the conservatory and devote all of his time to composing. There was only one stipulation: they must never meet. Thus began one of the most unusual friendships in musical history. For 17 years, they corresponded. Hundreds and hundreds of letters were written. She became his closest friend, but they never spoke a single word face to face. By 1891, Tchaikovsky was so famous that he was invited to travel from Russia to America to conduct his coronation march at the opening of Carnegie Hall, the new concert hall in New York City. He wrote home to his brother that he was more famous in America than he was even in Russia or Europe. He loved America and the American people, but he was very homesick and could not wait to get back to Russia. 2 years later, in 1893, Tchaikovsky died under mysterious circumstances. He was only 53 years old. Why do we continue to love the music of Tchaikovsky? And why is Swan Lake still performed by ballet companies all over the world and sold out year after year? First, it is a good story. Second, his music is like a painting that is bigger than life. It is bold and dynamic and tender and very much like a great movie soundtrack. But even more important, I think, is that Tchaikovsky was the creator of great melodies, tunes that are hummable, danceable, singable, and memorable. Listen. Tchaikovsky wrote a great ballet. Its name was Swan Lake. But you should never forget that Tchaikovsky in his time was on the edge. In fact, Tchaikovsky's great melodies can still be on the edge today. Listen.
Hello, this is Stephen Simon, your conductor for the story of Swan Lake. And I'm here to tell you some things about the music that you may not have known or may not have thought about. Composing for a full-length ballet required two kinds of music. Music to dance to, and music to help tell the story. Choreographers at the time liked music in the style of popular ballroom dances and dances from foreign countries. The waltz, for example, was a very popular dance at court. It is counted in three and is perhaps the easiest to identify. The tempo or speed of the waltz could vary greatly because the choreographer created his own dance steps to the music. Tchaikovsky composed a number of waltzes for Swan Lake. This is a very fast waltz, but one of my favorites. Listen and count with me. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. The Polonaise is another dance that was popular at the Tsar's court in Tchaikovsky's day. It, too, is counted in three, but it's a little slower and has a very heavy first beat. The Polonaise originated in Poland. That's how it got its name. Probably the most famous Polonaise of all time is this one by Frédéric Chopin, Poland's most famous composer. Have you ever heard this before? Now, listen to Tchaikovsky's Polonaise in Swan Lake. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. Because there is no talking in a ballet, only music and pantomime, that is, acting without speaking, the composer has to write music to help tell the story. Sometimes the music was sad, and sometimes it was happy. Listen to how Tchaikovsky takes his famous theme. And at the end, when Siegfried and Odette go up to heaven in the swan boat, he changes it to... And now, with all the brass, this is a change from minor to major. Isn't it amazing how, just by changing one note, the entire mood can shift? Tchaikovsky does something else that is interesting with this theme. He has reversed it. When it first appears at the beginning of the ballet in the overture, listen. Now listen to the way it appears throughout the rest of the ballet. This adds musical interest. A composer can use musical reference to help tell the story. The trumpet fanfare is always used to announce the arrival of important guests. There is also dramatic music. For example, chase music. Listen. You know from the music that Siegfried is really running, trying to catch up with Odette to explain his mistake. Tchaikovsky's music was more complicated than any ballet music had ever been before. In fact, some musicians thought that it was too difficult to play, and some dancers thought that you couldn't dance to it. But Tchaikovsky had changed ballet music forever. Now that you have some new ideas to think about as you listen to the music, perhaps you would like to go to iTunes and download the orchestral track without the narration. You may be surprised by how much more you hear in the music.
It's Gratitude Month on ICANN Radio. I'm Elena, ICANN and All Classical Radio's young artist in residence. I'll be sharing my gratitude for a piece of music every day. A piece of music that I'm incredibly grateful for is called New Second Line by the Olympia Brass Band. It's a tune that will get you to jump, sway, bounce, skip, and dance to the festive beats of this extraordinary band from New Orleans. Can you pretend you're dancing in the streets following this glorious group?